Making Chicken Salad this week is brought to you by Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy. Are you in Brisbane and thought about learning to be a wrestler? Well, here's your chance. Three Count Pro Wrestling Academy are based out of Beenleigh in Queensland, and they're committed to teaching the best, safest way to learn the art of professional wrestling. Hit up their Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or email admin@threecountfitness.com now to register your interest, and we thank them so much for supporting the show.
Here I was blaming AEW for feeding you chicken shit, knowing you mindless millennials would be eating it up as if it were chicken salad, when it's really been your fault all along.
Make chicken salad out of chicken shit. People is as people does, that's all there is to it. Put a square peg in a round hole, just never seems to fit. And you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit.
Welcome to Making Chicken Salad, the Wrestle Radio Australia podcast, where we talk about all things that are going on in the world of international wrestling. I am a proud graphics team, Lachlan Albert, and joining me is a disappointed Kota, Todd Eastman. Todd, how you doing, man?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing real good. I'm on a bit of a wrestling high at the moment because, look, it's been a while since I've sat down, watched a live wrestling show, and really enjoyed it. And that happened yesterday. Let's crack straight into it. We are talking about the results from AEW Full Gear. Right at the top, let's talk top of the card, moment of the night, AEW World Championship. We have a new world champion. Hangman Adam Page beats Kenny Omega to become the champion. Now, I mean, we're going to get straight into it, Todd, because we disagree about the ending of this match.
Yes, we and do. That is correct, sir.
So, first of all, how do you feel about Hangman becoming the champion?
Oh, mate, I'm probably on record for saying it. I thought he should have been the first AEW World Champion. I thought that if he'd have won that tournament over Chris Jericho, that would have been the push he needed to become that big name. So I'm not at all unhappy with Adam Page winning it. It's going to be very interesting going forward with Bryan Danielson and him apparently looking like they're going to then meet because he's the number one contender and all of that deal. So it could very much split the crowd, which is, it's an interesting thing to do for a champion's first sort of defense. If he loses on that first defense, then what the hell are they doing?
Definitely. I am a huge fan of Paige. I have regular arguments with my partner, who is not a fan of Paige, because when we saw him, her reaction was, he's just a guy. He's not doing anything. He's not a cowboy. He's just a wrestler. He's a Bullet Club guy. Why is he a hangman? But I love that more of that gimmick has bled through what he does. It's cowboy shit is a thing. You know, he's riding the horse in. And I thought that the match was pretty good. I don't think a lot of people have been calling it, you know, A+ 5 stars. I thought it was a pretty good match. But there's so much great storytelling around the match that makes it a really, really enjoyable thing to watch. I don't know if going back and rewatching that however many minutes bell to bell is excellent. I think it's pretty good, but there is some excellent storytelling there. From when he walks in, there's been a long-running thing with Adam Page and his bottom third that comes up at the bottom of the screen with the graphics team, all sorts of funny quotes for a long time. And when he entered, the quote there was, "We're proud of you," and it was a quote from the graphics team. That was just a little bit much for me. You know, Kenny walked in and there was the sign in the front row of the crowd that said, "What would Kota think?" You know, that kind of thing is fantastic. Right at the end of the match, and here's where we're about to strongly disagree, the Bucks came to the ring. And the Bucks were on the apron as Paige went to the Buckshot Lariat.
They were just ringside.
Ringside standing next to the apron as Paige was on the apron, set up for the Buckshot Lariat, and the Bucks, one after the other, gave him the nod, did not interfere, let him hit the lariat, get the win over Kenny Omega. I think that's fantastic storytelling. I think that if you didn't have the Bucks involved in this match, there would be that question mark of where was the rest of the elite during this. And having the Bucks there and realizing that this was Paige's moment and they could not interfere. This was his time. And they could grab his ankle, they could change the result, but it wasn't about that. They remembered their friend. They remembered who this man is and that he wants to be a good man. And he wants to take that belt home to his young son and be the world champion. And they let him have it. And I love it. I love that kind of storytelling. Take it away and be a grouch, Todd.
It's not about being a grouch. It's the fact that it took, for me, it took away from it because, A, plausibly they'd have been taken out after that match with Jurassic Express and Christian. I mean, one of them got a concerto, for God's sake, and apparently now you can get up after a half an hour of a concerto and be fine to walk out, even though he was being carried somewhat. That's still not like if you get a concerto, usually you're gone for a week or something like that. Do you know what I mean? That's one. Two.
Sure. In WWE, you're gone for a week after a concerto. This is the indies, Todd.
Two.
A super kick finishes a match in WWE, right?
Okay. Two. You talked about them coming out and doing that whole story time. Because if they didn't, then there would have been the question of where were they? Why couldn't that question be hanging there for Wednesday on Dynamite? So then Kenny can be like, where were you? Instead of, why didn't you interfere? Where were you? That sort of thing. I just think that it was like, it was something where like the focus wasn't on Adam Page where it should have been. The focus was on what are the Bucks going to do? Are the Bucks going to interfere? Are the Bucks going to do that? And that's not, for me, that's not what the story was. The story was him getting over Kenny.
Sure, but at the same time,
that's where I lost it for me.
To me, the thing that was in my head when the Bucks were there was, is the Dark Order going to come out? Can they hold themselves back? They know that Paige wants to do this himself, but they also want to be there protecting their friend. So you've got that tension playing on it as well. So to say that, like, because my thoughts were genuinely on, like, when the match was getting towards the end, I was like, when are the Bucks going to come out? What's going to happen with Dark Order? Where's, you know, the rest of the elite? Because that's on my brain. That's the story they've been telling for years. It's not a story that's about Paige in a vacuum, right? Like for Daniel Bryan, the story was about Daniel Bryan and the fans wanting Daniel Bryan. It wasn't about anyone else. But this story was about Adam Page and the people he surrounded himself with. And I think if you don't tell that story, including those people, if the people he surrounded himself with aren't in the climax of that story, you haven't told the story correctly.
Well, why can't they do that the next week on Dynamite? Do you know what I mean? Why couldn't have this solely been Adam Page getting over on Kenny Omega, then Kenny saying to the Bucks, where were you afterwards? And then, like you said, the whole thing about the Dark Order, would they come out with that? They already told that story and the guys held them back, if you remember, a while ago. That story got told and they settled everything with the guys. So that, to me, that was a dead issue because Adam Page had already settled it and they had an agreement. And they go, this is what you want to do. We're not going to do this. We're going to respect your wishes, which they did. That started a little bit of the civil thing and then they fixed it. And then that, to me, tells me that story was done. What it tells me now is that, like, any thought of it carrying on at all is gone. There might be a little tension now between Omega and sure, the Bucks. Why didn't you do it? But they could have done that with them not being out there. The focus could have solely been on Adam Page getting that victory. And that, to me, that's why, to me, I didn't really like the fact that they were out there. It wasn't about those guys. It was about that night was about Adam Page. You can tell that other story afterwards. That night was about Adam Page.
Sure. I think this is going to be an agree to disagree because I love the story they told, you know? And the moment at the end where Dark Order comes out and offers him a beer and he throws away the beer and gets him in a big group hug, that is exactly what I wanted out of the climax of this story. Because that, you're absolutely
that,
right.
That could have been had no
Page out there standing by himself celebrating. But yeah, I think that when the hero overcomes the odds, I need the odds to be against him, right? Like, as much as Callus makes the odds a little bit against Page in that match, I want every element of stacked odds that you can get, and I still want him to overcome.
Fair enough. Like I said to you yesterday, agree to disagree, and you said, but it's no fun if you don't argue.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So let's move on to something that I think we're a bit less excited over and more in agreement on that. The Women's World Championship was defended by Britt Baker against Ty Conti in a match that was fine, I guess.
Yeah, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. It disappointed me somewhat.
Yeah, so I texted you during the pre-show. I said that there was a tag team match on the pre-show that was who was in that match? It was Nyla Rose and
Hikaru Shida and
we're at this point with the AEW women's roster, right?
Did we not?
The British one who was in Britt Baker's corner. Jamie Hayter was with Nyla Rose and Shida was with totally blanking. We'll think of it. But I said, literally any one of those four women, I would have preferred to see be the one challenging Britt Baker. And then, just to add to it, at ringside, they had, and again, I'm blanking on names, too much wrestling on one.
Vicky Guerrero?
One hit. No, not Vicky Guerrero, but
Thunder Rosa.
Thunder Rosa was the other person in the match. And then Straight Edge Society, Serena Deeb.
Oh, yes,
Serena Deeb was at ringside in the match, right? So there's five different women that I would have rather had challenging for the belt than Ty Conti. Because nothing against Ty Conti. She's green. She's learning. She's getting a lot better. And she did a good job stepping up to the plate. I think she did a really good job stepping up for the experience that she's had. But
I could be wrong, but I messaged you halfway through it saying Britt Baker looks gassed. Like she looks.
It wasn't a great showing of the women's division here. And that's really disappointing because there's names that should be out there doing star making performances. Anyway, we had the final for the AEW World Title Tournament Eliminator. It was Bryan Danielson against Miro. Danielson came out on top, is now the number one contender. And I think this match would have been great if it wasn't following a couple of absolute bangers. I think that I was wiped from the previous matches. It was two guys hitting each other hard. I like that. But when you've just given me two really, really good matches that work on lots of levels, I can only watch two guys hitting each other for a certain amount of time. And I think the biggest problem I have with Full Gear, every match was long. I just feel like every match could have had 5 minutes shaved off it and the show would have benefited from that.
But you see, that's my theory with AEW in general. If every match was 5 minutes shorter, they'd be a lot better. It's like they give you everything you want. Then you go, did you like that? Yeah. We're going to go to again before the end of the match. Like, no, don't just. I know you do all this cool stuff, but just don't do it all the time, every time.
Look, a lot of these guys used to work on indie shows where there were 10 guys backstage and you had to put on a 2-hour show, right? So they are used to putting on a long match that gets and keeps the crowd invested. But I think now that we've got a roster that is, we've talked about it before, overcrowded, you can shave 5 minutes off every match. They could have had a show the same length with another long match on it, and it would have been a better show.
Yeah. But I mean, I didn't mind this Danielson Miro match because I think it was what it needed to be. It wasn't overly long. And it was very different to everything else that had been so far. There was no big high-flying moves. It was just mat wrestling and hard hitting, which I like. It wasn't a bad match. It was just, it was what it needed to be for that card, because there had to be a point there where they rested the crowd a little bit because of all the stuff that they were doing. And I think I said that to you while we were watching it. I was like, they're going to burn this crowd out in the first three matches. And yeah. And that's why, like, when you saw those NXT takeovers back in the day, I think there was only four matches on those cards.
They were, like, most of them were five, I think. Like, they were tight.
Because they gave them that extra time to do the stuff, and the crowd stayed with them that whole way. Like, you could argue halfway through that world title match with Hangman and Omega, that crowd was burnt.
Yep.
They were very quiet in spots. Because they just seen 4 hours.
If you go back and look at those takeovers, they were like 90-minute shows.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you look at the first 90 minutes of this show, the crowd was insanely hot, right? Mm. But it wasn't a 90-minute show. It was a 4-hour show. So, like, as good as the wrestling is, you're going to get burnt out and emotionally exhausted by the end of it. Like, that's just how it goes. I think that this was in the right spot, being the third match on the card. I think Danielson's the right person to have. It's the right time to make him number one contender, because if you don't do it now, people are confused why. Because we had that match with Omega where Danielson proved that he can go toe to toe with the champ and last for a huge amount of time. Looks like he may have gotten the win right after that time got called. So he should be in the world title picture. If he wasn't, people would be asking questions.
It was also the fact
that we talked last week about in that spot as well.
It was also the fact that what really were you going to do? Were you going to give Brian Danielson his first loss against Miro? So I was like, what were you going to do? The only thing, like I said to you before, that confuses me is that this is Brian Danielson now against Hangman Page. Hangman Page might get over on Danielson. I hope he does, because I want to see a decent reign out of Hangman. But it's like I said, you're splitting the crowd. These are two incredibly hot
faces
at the moment. Go on.
Yeah, I'm convinced that the story that we're about to see is that Don Callis has gotten an automatic rematch clause put into Omega's contract, so he's entitled to the rematch, even though Danielson's the number one contender. It ends up being a triple threat.
And yeah, that's right, you told me, and I said very WrestleMania Daniel Bryan in a triple threat match for a title.
Yeah, very very WWE Daniel Bryan in a triple threat for the title. Speaking of Daniel Bryan wrestling, how about those JR calls, huh? Anyway, I'm gonna go on my little rant here.
Poor dude. Seriously. If you've been calling someone that for the last...
Credit to him, right? Credit to him. He's an old man who has been calling him Daniel Bryan for a very long time, right? But I don't think JR is necessary on this booth. I think you've got Excalibur is probably the best commentator full stop in the world right now. I don't think there's many better. I think that he is really consistent. He is really good at what he does. He is interesting and informative. I think that Shivani has no right to be as good as he is to this day. Shivani is really, really good. And Shivani is just happy to be there.
Let's face it. Shivani is just happy to be there. That's what it is. And I'm sorry, Shivani was working
at Subway or something. So
to be honest with you, I think JR is still better than Excalibur. Look, no offense, and this is probably very Cornette, so I apologize ahead of time. Nobody knows who the fuck Excalibur is except for 500 fans or 1,000. You know what I mean? Nobody knew who he was before.
Nobody knows who Excalibur is except the people who were fans of the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Adam Page.
But that's not like who they're trying to reach out over TV. So this guy saying, oh, I fought him back in 1993 in Bingo Hall. No one gives a shit, mate. Like, no offense, but no one does.
Sure, but Todd, no one gives a shit about how the Sooners played football today.
That is wrong. A lot of Sooners give a shit.
Sure, but I seriously, like, JR does absolutely nothing for me on commentary. I get that he was the voice of wrestling for people for years. I'm coming in, for me, the voice of wrestling was Michael Cole. That's just the age that I am. I was not watching Raw when JR was doing commentary, right? So I don't have that nostalgia for it. And what I hear is this old man who is constantly talking about football and getting the wrestler's name wrong. He is not called Jungle Boy's name without adding Jack Perry to it ever. And Jungle Boy has never called himself Jack Perry. And yet JR does it every time. He calls Bryan Danielson the wrong name working on pay-per-view in front of hundreds of thousands of people. I don't know why you have JR on this, except for I think it'd be great to bring him in for big moments, like WWE did late in his run there, where they brought him in for Undertaker matches on WrestleMania. Fantastic. Get the ultimate wrestling voice, and then he doesn't have to pay any attention to all the stuff he clearly doesn't care about.
Okay. He called him Daniel Bryan because he'd been calling him Daniel Bryan on air for X amount of years, yeah?
Yep.
Excalibur never did that because he's only ever known him as Bryan Danielson. Like face-to-face, man-to-man, as friends, he's only ever known him as Bryan Danielson. So he's got that sort of advantage, if you would. What was the other thing you said? Because I had a retort and I forgot because you kept going.
Jungle Boy Jack Perry.
He does that so people go, Jack Perry, is that Matthew Perry, Luke Perry's son? It's a whole thing to try and engage a crowd that isn't being engaged because they're just going with.
So if that's what they want to push, if they want to push that he's not Matthew Perry's son, if they want to push if they want to push that he's Luke Perry's son, why is JR the only person doing it?
He's not. Other people have done it as well. Tony's done it. Excalibur's done it as well. They've talked about it.
All right.
When they had the mother and the daughter in the crowd, the mother and the sister, sorry, in the crowd.
Sure.
For the match against the thing. It's sure. A whole thing about, like, because let's face it, other than being called Jungle Boy, he doesn't exude any other thing that makes him a Jungle Boy. Does he?
No, I think he needs to fix the gimmick. I fully agree.
Yeah. But so, I mean,
I don't think
maybe this is a way of them transitioning into. And I'm sure if Tony Khan didn't like it, he would say, stop calling him Jack Perry.
Yeah, and I totally get that. I don't like it. Like, that's what it comes down to, right? JR's commentary is something that makes me disengage from the wrestling because it puts up a barrier between me and what I'm watching. Because I hear JR say something and I go, hang on, did he just call him Daniel Bryan? Why is he talking about the Sooners? He called him Jack Perry again. And I'm no longer watching the wrestling and taking in information about the wrestling. And that makes me feel like it's bad commentary and he shouldn't be there.
You should stop picking on him. And every time I hear...
I'm picking on an old man and it's very mean.
Right. And every time I hear Excalibur talk about how he's faced this guy before back in 1992 in bloody Reseda, I don't give a shit about that either. Do you know what I mean?
Did you see the matches in Reseda? They were very good.
No, because I didn't buy the DVDs.
Anyway, let's... Yeah, that's right. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the AEW World Tag Team Championship. My guys versus your guys. It's my number one and number two tag teams in the world. It's Lucha Brothers and FTR. It's magic. I love these two teams. I love it.
It was a so really good match.
The Lucha Brothers. So let's talk about the finish. The Lucha Brothers defended the AEW World Tag Team Championships when FTR tried to go for the old Killer Bees gimmick of putting on the mask so that the ref couldn't tell who was the legal man. They got the illegal man into the ring with a mask on. Didn't work. Got pinned. And they tried to appeal to the ref of he wasn't the legal man. And the ref went, well, you put the mask on. How was I supposed to know? So Lucha Brothers have retained, but I see there being a potential argument in the future of FTR claiming that they were never beaten because they They know the rules. They hold the tag rope. They know who the legal man is, and the legal man wasn't pinned.
Mm.
As well as that, this match kicked ass. It was so much fun.
It was, yes. Like I even tweeted about it. That end is what ruined the match for me somewhat, because that's when the match should have gotten restarted, and then they get the victory. Do you know what I mean? Because if the referee admits he's made a mistake, he should restart the match.
I would have actually, look, I would have really liked if the match had been restarted and Cash was there to, you know, because he was ready for the match to be restarted, set up for the Shatter Machine immediately. And then, I know it's not called the Shatter Machine anymore, immediately hit the big finish. They get the win. Now the belts have changed hands, but the Lucha Brothers have been screwed over because they thought they won and it got restarted when they didn't expect it. Like, there's all sorts of things that they could have done. I think that the way it ended makes me think we're getting more Lucha Brothers versus FTR. And yeah. I am never going to complain about that.
No.
And if this is not the if this is not the last match in this series, are they holding something back? Because if they are, I want to see it.
I mean, yeah, if they were going to do it, they should have done it here, where they'd done that. And then the illegal man had won the title with the mask on. That's what causes the rematch down the line. Like Lucha Bros get their rematch because they clearly cheated. When you do stuff like this, it should favor the heels. Do you know what I mean? It shouldn't be the referee goes, oh, well, I didn't. It was your fault because you put the mask on, so I'm just going to let it go. And he doesn't do that. The referee should be like, shit, it's a wrong call. I'm sorry. We have to restart this match. That's the gimmick. To steal something from Brody, that's the gimmick. It's just, that's the way it should go.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, to do it and to not have them, like, what are they going to do? Like, they can't do that again. They can't do that spot again because it's been done like this. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, there's but they no don't have to do that spot again.
No, you know, but they've burnt it is what I'm saying. It's like, They've tried to outsmart them and it didn't work. And do you know what I mean? So it's been burnt. They can't really do it again because, like, well, how come they didn't fall for it? How come they fell for it this time? They didn't fall for it last time. That's my only thing. Like, I love that match because I love halfway through it, I messaged you and said, if your answer to the best tag team in the world is not FTR, you've made the wrong answer. Because they are. They're the best tag. They can work with
everybody. Like, Lucha Brothers are my favorite. FTR are the best.
Yes, because they can work with everybody and make sense and use the stuff that these guys do, like the Lucha Brothers do, and fit it into a narrative that makes sense in the real world, if that makes sense. To fit the world, well, yeah, that could happen because, I don't know. How was that one spot, though, where they did this thing where Dax and Cash came in the ring and then... Penta was in the ring, and then from nowhere, like a superhero, Phoenix just landed right next to him. That looks
so good.
Like, the way the camera angled there, because you didn't see him do the vault, so you just saw him land in like he was Super Ray.
Boom. Yeah, no, it's like
it wasn't my that wasn't my favorite match on the card, because we're going to get to my favorite match on the card, but that was 1A of my favorite matches on that card.
It was, for me, that was my favorite match on the card. There were things that came extremely close. And the things that came extremely close we haven't talked about yet, but that was it for me. So let's move on to the top non-title match that was built for this, which is CM Punk and Eddie Kingston. CM Punk taking the victory after getting some color, a brutal match, just pounding back and forth. We heard in the amazing promo they did a week earlier that Eddie said, I don't want to win the match. I just want to hurt you. I want to fight you. And one of my favorite things about this match, and I could be wrong, you might be about to correct me here, I don't think Eddie Kingston made a pinfall attempt this entire match.
I couldn't tell you. It's on my head.
If he did, I've blocked it from my memory. Eddie was there to beat the shit out of CM Punk, and he did. So in a way, Kingston won and got what he wanted. Punk won the match because he's a professional wrestler. Afterwards, Punk tried to show the respect to Eddie Kingston, offered the handshake. Kingston stormed off exactly the same as he did to CM Punk. And we're building this story exactly the same as he did to Brian. And we're building this story where Kingston earns the respect of these indie legends and then refuses to shake the hand because he wants to keep fighting. Loved it. Thought it was awesome. What do you reckon?
This was, I could be wrong, but I think this was the quickest match on the card.
That sounds correct to me.
Yeah. And again, it was a different match because it wasn't really your traditional wrestling match. It was a brawl. They weren't, and there wasn't a technical wrestling brawl like Miro and Danielson was. It was just a hard hitting, full on brawl. And maybe that's why they made it that shorter time period, maybe to give us that.
Yeah, I can confirm more. I can confirm that Punk and Kingston went 11 minutes flat. The women's tag match on the pre-show went 12 and a half. The next shortest match on the actual card was 15 and a half minutes, which was the women's championship match. So it was the shortest match by a fair chunk.
Yeah, by about 4 or 5 minutes. So yeah, wow. I noticed that because I think I messaged you. I was like, wow, that was really quick. I didn't expect it to be like that, especially when you think about it. That was quicker than any of Punk's TV matches.
And I think it was enhanced by the fact that it was so knockdown, drag out that it flew by as well. It was one of those matches that you look at your watch and go, how did 11 minutes pass just then? Because it for me, gripped me.
The thing about it, like it left us, like as people who love watching wrestling, wanting more. Storyline-wise, I don't know if there is more to tell. Do you know what I mean? Because of what you said, Kingston just wanted to beat him up. He didn't want to win the match. And Punk was just like, I just want to have some fun. I'm here to have fun. If it means I've got to kick his ass to do it, I'll do it. And he won the match. So from what I can tell, both guys got what they wanted out of that match. So we're not going to see two.
I don't necessarily think we see Punk versus Kingston again, but I think we see more of this story of Kingston earned Punk's respect, but then rejected him when he tried to offer that handshake. I don't think that the story is over here, even though I think that we're not getting another one-on-one match between these two. And that's fine. Punk's got a lot to do in this company. This is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, this is like the third real match that Punk's had in AEW. Right? He's got a lot more to do.
Yeah. Because it's not in the rundown, should we talk about them announcing Jay Lethal as a new signee for AEW?
Yes, let's talk about it because as you'll probably expect, my feelings have become more mixed over the past 24 hours. So
is this because of the allegations?
Yeah, so let's, you know, bit of a content warning here. We are going to talk about speaking out quite briefly. But there has been allegations that Jay Lethal, very non-specific allegations, that in Ring of Honor, Jay Lethal committed some kind of sexual misconduct behind the scenes that apparently he got away with because of political power within the company, while other men who were acting predatory behind the scenes were ousted from the company for similar actions, but because of Lethal standing, he was kind of allowed to do what he liked. It's a complicated matter, and it has very much dampened my excitement, because when you hear things like this, it's impossible to know what's true and what's not. I tend to believe people that come out with accusations, because I know that is not an easy thing to do and can often harm the people coming out with accusations quite a lot. So generally, if someone's going to come out with that stuff, they've thought a lot about it before they do. So I tend to think that it tends to be true if someone's coming out and saying that stuff, which is disappointing, because Lethal is, you know, one of the biggest names in indie wrestling over the past, I would say, 2 decades. You know, a defining figure for both Ring of Honor and TNA, a huge name and definitely a big signing for AEW, no matter what.
Here's the thing that I query about it, right? Because like you said, Ring of Honor had ousted guys before because they come out. There's been stuff coming out of it, right? And he said because of Jay Lethal's political power backstage that he was saved, or that's why nothing happened, because after... I would think that if they were going to save somebody that maybe had done something, it might have been someone like Marty Scurll, who at the time was booking the promotion, and was maybe because they said, look, here's all this evidence, we're going to have to... So, like, we don't know the investigation that went on
at Ring of Honor. We don't.
Just with the same of, like, I'm sure that Tony Khan and that would have done their background checks before hiring him to come into AEW, especially because of the way that they let Jimmy Havoc go.
Yeah,
for similar sort of things. So I'm going to go err on the side of they've done their due diligence with investigations. And if there was stuff that had come up, I'm sure Tony Khan wouldn't have hired the guy, because like he's got a lot of people to choose from to hire at the moment.
Yeah.
So why would you with a headache?
That's true. It's, for me, it's enough of a question mark to dampen my excitement, I guess, is where it's at, right? Mm. No matter what the situation is, he has put himself in a position where someone dislikes him enough to make that accusation, either based on truth or based on whatever's happened behind the scenes between people that is clearly not pleasant. I know that happens, you know, not irregularly in wrestling, but if it's enough to come out with an accusation like that, there's something going on that's unsavory. So
yeah,
it's put a dampener like this, on it and for this me. It'll be interesting to see.
Sorry, this too, just to be clear, this too for me is not me defending somebody who might have done something like this. This is me...
No, I don't take it as that at all. No.
Yeah, this is me defending the fact that I think that AEW would have done their due diligence. And I think as much shit as I give Tony Khan, I think he's smarter than to hire someone with a questionable... that would have something questionable like that come out, where it's irrefutable evidence that he did this thing and they would have to get rid of him, especially when they did it on arguably their biggest show of the year with the biggest, like the title change, and then put him straight away into a TNT title match. So I would imagine that they would have done all this investigation.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. And like, if he's done it,
yeah,
like he shouldn't have that role. Simple as that. But there's also a fact that you've got to, if there's been an investigation and nothing's come up, then I don't know who's at the end of the day, is he maybe the victim because somebody's got an axe to grind? I don't know. And I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying I can see that AEW would be like, well, we asked Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor, the position they're in at the moment, we're like, here's what we found.
Yeah.
I can't see them going, no, go and do your own investigations. I'd say, look, this is why we found, this is why we kept him. We wouldn't have kept him around because we got rid of our booker.
Yeah, I there's definitely, we'll see how it plays out. He has been put in that prominent role going straight into that TNT title match with Sammy Guevara. So we'll see where he lands on the AEW card.
The thing too is, like, if everybody was so up in arms about this, where have they been for the last year and a half where Jay Lethal has been working for Ring of Honor? They haven't been causing this furor about it. It's literally only just flared up because he walked out and talked to Tony Schiavone.
Yeah. And there's names that, you know, that I will not mention, who anytime that they have tried to do something, we have heard that further. So it's definitely more of a question mark than it is a defad guy, but it's, for me, it's still a question mark. But I want to speak about another person coming into AEW who I am unrepentantly excited to see. We are going to get a tag team match between the Butcher and the Blade, Ishii is going to be a great fit on this roster for as long as he's here. So many really cool opportunities for that. I think that throwing him in a tag team match with the Butcher and the Blade, to me, seems like allowing him to get his footing working to camera and on US soil before they start putting him in singles matches. But I'm excited to see where potentially they put him on the card.
Yeah, well, we don't know how long he's there either. We don't know how long any of these New Japan guys are there. Like, because there's a whole a group of them that came over.
Yep. So, you know, plenty of possibilities there. Let's move on to the next match on the Full Gear card. The opening match, and one that is very, very close to being my match.
Can we leave that opening match to last? Because I really don't want to finish Minneapolis Street Fight. If that's okay with you. That's all right.
Let's talk about the Minneapolis Street Fight then.
Please, let's do.
Because you know that I love talking about Chris Jericho. It's my favorite thing in the world. So Minneapolis Street Fight, the Inner Circle, Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara, Jake Hager, Santana and Ortiz defeated American Top Team represented by Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, MMA Fighters, Junior Dos Santos and Andre Arlovsky, as well as their manager, Dan Lambert, who was part of the 10-man match. Chris Jericho got the pin on Dan Lambert, which came after a whole lot of chaos. And it was a big gimmick match where everything was invented in Minneapolis. So they used water skis and a bundt cake pan and a toaster. And it was chaos. And you could tell how new to wrestling Dos Santos and Arlovsky were, because there was a moment, for instance, that should have been really cool, where Jericho went for the lion's salt. And I believe it was Dos Santos just popped up and knocked him in the jaw, which would have been great, except for the fact that Jericho had to hang on the rope for 30 seconds in order for Arlovsky to get up and hit him. You know, and that's the thing, is they're green. It's their first match. That's why there's a whole lot of gimmicks in there to, you know, cover for the fact that they don't really know how to wrestle yet. And a lot of the story was focused on Jericho wanting to get his hands on Lambert. But yeah, this was nothing.
This to me should have been the shortest match on the card. Really? And oh,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, watching it at the start of this match, I was like, why are they just doing it as a normal tag match? Because everyone's lined up in their corners, the bell rang, and this was a street fight. From the get-go, they could have just started and it would have hit a lot of stuff.
This match was longer than the tag team match between Lucha Brothers and FTR. This match was longer than the other tag team match, which I'll put into our list because we forgot to put it in the list because they forgot to advertise it. It was way longer than... It was almost double the length of Punk and Kingston. And it was nothing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we did forget that tag match. I guess everyone forgot that tag match.
Let's jump straight into the forgotten tag match then, shall we? Because anyway, I don't want to spend any more time talking about...
Yeah, that match happened.
Straight fun.
It happened. Jericho got his win back. Yay.
Hooray for you. I tell you what, though, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky are very good. And
yes,
Sammy Guevara can do some very cool moves.
What annoys me is that, like, Scorpio Sky was that guy that they were going to strap the rocket on, and then nothing came from it. Remember that whole Sonic ring?
Yep.
And all of that thing? I don't know what happened, but, like, he started out in the best position possible in AEW, in that tag team, won the tag titles first, and then just... fell the F off. I don't know what's going on, because he is a great worker and should be given a chance.
He's awesome. Ethan Page also can do some really good stuff. His series in Evolve with Darby Allin is obviously a classic for a reason. And he's stuck here as well. Another couple of people who are stuck here are Santana and Ortiz, who are just good and have been very good for a very long time.
Yep.
And they're stuck being the fourth and fifth most important members of the second most important team in a Minneapolis Street Fight.
Well, come on. They're not more important than Jake Hager. Like, they're more important than Jake Hager. Let's come on now.
I think they're more important than Jake Hager. Then again, I think a roast chicken is more important to AEW than Jake Hager. Anyway, let's talk about the match that is so forgettable that it didn't end up on our run sheet. That was the tag team match between Cody Rhodes and Pac versus Malakai Black and Andrade El Idolo, which was a victory for Cody. Shocker. But like, it was good.
Was it really a victory for Cody?
I thought it was really, really cool to see three men come out and get huge cheers, and then Cody Rhodes come out and just get showered with boos. And then the commentary team tried their best to cover up for the fact that everyone hates Cody.
The only thing the crowd could have done that would have been worse if they'd all turned their back. That's the only thing, because they would, like, you heard crickets when he came out.
Yeah,
it was compared to everyone else. It was, if Tony Khan doesn't see that and go, look, we're going to have to do something with you, man, because you can't, you cannot stay a babyface. It's just, this is not feasible.
It's ridiculous. In saying that, anytime Puck and Black and Italo were doing stuff, it was cool. Like, yeah, those guys are really good. Andrade did have a moment where he tried to copy Cody going over the top rope and got a little bit stuck.
You're hung up for a while.
You could see that they were kind of smiling and giggling to each other when it happened. Like, that's just how it's going to go sometimes. Congratulations to Botchamania for getting a great clip there.
Here's the thing, though. Cody is an amazing worker. And if he embraced being a heel, it would probably be great. I mean, you got to look, one of the best matches in AEW history is him and his brother, Dustin. Straight up. And even him and, like, MJF, that opening like 6 to 12 months of AEW, full of really good Cody matches. Cody just seems to have really embraced this American theme in a time where that's not that cool anymore. It's not,
people don't want to see Cena and Hogan anymore.
No. But if you want to do that ironically and be a heel out of it, you could probably, he could probably work that so well and get so over as a heel. But it's sort of like not doing it. Do you know what I mean? I want to be a babyface, where everyone's like, well, we don't want you to be a babyface. We don't like you.
Yeah. I do just want to point out that to me, this is the match that when people talk about how AEW is all just ex-WWE guys, sometimes you forget that may be true. But AEW has really made these guys feel like AEW guys. 100% of that match is former WWE wrestlers. Cody Rhodes, Pac, Malakai Black, Andrade, all WWE guys.
See, I still think of them as that when I watch that, right? Especially when like Bryan Danielson and Miro and then these guys, I'm just like, well, these are just matches that I might have seen on a WWE show. Do you know what I mean?
Miro still feels like that. Danielson still feels like that.
What I see, the big problem I had with this tag is just it felt just pointless. There was no real reason from the tag up. There was no, like, there's nothing about Andrade's character and Black's character that would lend themselves to tag, especially Black. Black, really, when you look at that character, who would he tag with unless it was someone who is in the House of Black?
Yeah, other than Brody King, he shouldn't be tagging. It did feel like a match that was made on the fly by Teddy Long, didn't it?
It was like, oh, we need to get these four guys on the card. I can't have a 9-match card. Let's just throw them together as a tag.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
All right, let's move on, because we're both a little bit like, it was a good match, but it didn't excite either of us.
No.
I think is what we're coming to here. So let's talk about the Falls Count Anywhere match between Christian Cage and Jurassic Express versus the Super Click. So that's Christian Cage, Jungle Boy, and Luchasaurus versus Matt and Nick Jackson, the Bucks, and Adam Cole. This one was won by Jurassic Express and Christian Cage when Jungle Boy gave in, hit, I believe it was Matt Jackson with a concerto for the victory, succumbing to the dark side a little bit there. The star of this match was Luchasaurus for me. This showed that guy can go. He is a great base for other guys, but this was a bit of a star maker for him. He did an awesome, was it a moonsault off the stage onto them? A shooting star off the stage onto the guys below. Sorry, there's been too much wrestling. did a shooting star press off the ramp that was super cool. Showed that he could do the power game, he could do the athletic game. I thought he was great in this match. I liked that there was a storytelling beat of Jungle Boy giving in and using the concerto. Adam Cole bled a lot. You could see him going, oh, I can blade again. But yeah, like, it was a good match. It was a chaotic Falls Count Anywhere six man. It was good.
Yeah. It's not my type of match, to be honest with you, because it was just all very spot. Especially when I see it's guys like, as much as like I might give them shit, Cole, well, not so much Cole, but the Bucks and Cole, outstanding wrestlers. Let them just wrestle, have a match, wrestling match. Especially when you've got Christian in there and you've got a guy, like you said, Luchasaurus, who can base and can do all of this sort of stuff. That's the only thing I didn't like about it. Like, I liked the whole storytelling thing when Christian was going to do it and Jungle Boy puts his hand on his shoulder. No, let me do it. I mean, obviously he didn't swing it very hard because Matt was still up for the main event. But it was just...
See, that's the thing. Jungle Boy's not experienced at delivering concertos. It's the same reason. See, this is why you've got to pay attention. It's the same reason that Adam Page's one-winged angel doesn't put Omega away. But Omega's one-winged angel would have put Page away. You see?
You legit sound like every mark in comment sections.
And that's why when Matt Hardy was not dropping an elbow...
Don't fucking start on that. Because that, if that wasn't on my personal Facebook, I tell you, that would have gone.
I knew I'd get you with that one. Knew I'd get you with that.
That's one. That's in my chicken shit this week. That is for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to say I don't need to talk about it because it's coming up as chicken shit.
Yeah.
But let's finish off on a high. The opening match. Sorry, got you riled up there, did I, Toddy?
You did.
The opening match, MJF versus Darby Allin. You know what? I'm going to let you take the lead on this one, Todd. What did you think of MJF and Darby Allin?
I absolutely loved it. MJF's pacing, his ring awareness, he's working the crowd. He's so far above his experience level that it's not even funny. He let Darby Allin get his spots in, if you will. Let Darby Allin be that fighting underdog that he is. They did the spot with the he hurt his own knee, and then Darby Allin started like working on it to exploit that thing. And like I called it wrong myself. I remember halfway through I said to you, Darby's going to win with a figure four pin that he does, because I can see this with the knee. Yeah. The way they told
working the knee, yeah.
Yeah, the way they told that finish with MJF at the very start, walking in and telling Justin Roberts to announce him as the guy that will beat Darby Allin with a headlock takeover, and then doing it after hitting him with the ring is chef's kiss. That is brilliant. The only
let's talk about the exact finish. Ref distracted. MJF pulls from his tights the diamond ring, puts it on his hands. Hits him with the punch, brass knuck style, tucks it back in the tights. Darby is leaning against MJF, and he uses the headlock takedown to get the pin.
Yeah. The only thing I would say that took away for this for me was the refereeing. And I said this to you, and I think I even put it on Twitter. Referees should only be counting when people's shoulders are on the mat. I know that spot was cool when they did the whole, you know, the small package thing where they were rolling around the ring. I think maybe two of those, the guy's shoulders were actually on the mat for. And that's like production can cover that by going to a wide shot. But they didn't. They went in close. So you could see. And even when MJF pinned Darby Allin, he had his head so far up. His shoulders weren't even on the mat. There was a meme going around about it straight after. Somebody took a screenshot of it and then put the meme up.
Yeah, I think I sent it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's and that.
Of, if you crowded in the arena tonight, there's plenty of room under Darby's shoulders.
Yeah. See, and that to me, that's wrestling 101. Like, you win a match by having the shoulders pinned on the mat, just because that's the finish that's supposed to happen. You as a referee should say, tilt him so his shoulders are on the mat. His shoulders aren't down. It's as simple as that. Like, you're a referee. A referee, and this is something that even as, like, when I work in wrestling myself as a booker, will tell referees, you call that match straight. Like, you know what's going on, but you call, don't let them cheat in front of you. Give them a warning. If the shoulders aren't down on the mat, don't count it. If they don't kick out, they don't kick out.
And we've had this exact discussion about shoulders being down on this podcast before about AEW. The shoulders need to be on the mat. If you are going to tell us that this is an athletic competition, there needs to be rules to win. And you need to follow the rules to win.
Well, there was one spot even in the main event, all right? And this is where I will give a referee props. Aubrey comes sliding in, does that really need that last knee fall before the whole shenanigans happened. When the referee was knocked out of the ring and she came running down to count the three, her hand hit that mat three times, but because she saw the shoulder up, she was like, it was only two, his shoulder was up. Because if any human can't stop their hand that close to when you're swinging it down with the power that these guys are
doing
to count three. So as a ref, you just go, no, that was two, his shoulder was up, that was two. As simple
and
as that.
Props to Aubrey, doing fantastic work as always. It was a huge pop to me when Aubrey came down because it felt like it was right for the big moment to have Aubrey ref it. That was something I forgot to mention when we were talking about that match, but I thought that was great. But yeah, other than that little issue with the shoulders, which I'm almost...
That was an ongoing issue through the whole night, though. That was a whole...
Yes.
A night full of that, to be honest with you. That's not just a one-off sort of thing.
I'm hoping that because this is such a big show where that became a thing, that that gets brought up to everyone AEW-wide of shoulders need to be on the mat. This is an opportunity to learn. And when you're as young as freaking MJF and Darby Allin, who are learning experience for them, right? Because they had the third longest match on the show. They were 30 seconds shorter than the Falls Count Anywhere match. And they were, a couple of minutes shorter than the title match. So they had a main event length match that was main event quality. Yeah. It was
excellent. They also showed that they are definitely two of the four pillars of AEW. They are the future of AEW. So, and I know that MJF teases that he might go to WWE when his contract is up. Tony should just throw all the monies. Throw all the money at MJF because he's your future. And to me, MJF should be the guy that takes the belt off Adam Page.
Oh, I'm massively into that.
He should be the guy to do it because I legitimately cannot see another heel on that roster that I believe in to be a world champion more than that guy.
Yeah, 100%. I have a question for you.
Yes.
And it was something that came up in conversation with a friend. Who is the better promo? Is it MJF or is it Eddie Kingston?
They're two different, very, very different styles of promo.
They're very different. The reason that this came up was I said to a friend, I would say MJF's the best promo in the company, except Eddie Kingston exists. And everything he does just feels real and important and powerful. And anytime he cuts a promo, I'm on YouTube to watch it. That happens half the time with MJF. It happens 100% of the time with Eddie Kingston. And then my mate replied, I don't care about Eddie Kingston's promos. They're all the same.
Yeah. I mean, also too, Eddie doesn't go out to deliberately rile up a crowd. He just goes out and
talks. Yeah,
whereas MJF is going out there to do a job, and that job he does is always very good.
Like, it's a very different skill.
He didn't do where Britt Baker did when she all of a sudden she walked into Pittsburgh and she was a baby face for that night because she loves Pittsburgh. He walked into his home state and gave them shit because his job is to be hated. And that to me, I think that to me probably is what would tell me that he is better. And not only that, he's only been doing it for how many years? Eddie Kingston's had...
Oh, it's stupid.
Eddie Kingston's had 15 years to learn this craft. MJF is an equal, if not better, already. So God knows what he'll be like in another 5 years.
I actually want to give an early chicken salad to something that's old, but I watched it again this week because it's one of those things that I just love flicking on every so often. There's a guy on YouTube who makes documentaries about indie wrestlers, and he did one on MJF. It's called MJF, A Real Documentary. Yep. I encourage anyone to go out and watch it because what I would do is I would find it, go to his channel and watch one about Keith Lee or the one about Johnny Gargano, get a sense of what these documentaries feel like, and then watch the MJF one. Because there is no one who does kayfabe heel work like MJF.
Mm-hmm.
It's the next level. I don't want to spoil this documentary for anyone.
He did it in your favorite show, Rose to the Top.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
When he was in that scene with the kid, he goes, "Do you have a baby? I don't care. I don't care." And then walks away. You know, behind the scenes, he's a nice guy and they get along.
He can't not be the nicest guy, right?
Yeah.
He's got to be. But, because the only way you can know how to piss someone off that well is if you have that level of empathy. So I've got to believe that he's a super nice guy, but he is so good at maintaining that kayfabe arsehole.
I'm a decent heel and I'm an arsehole. So, I mean, that
ruins your theory. Oh, no, you're just somewhat an arsehole all the time. So
that ruins your theory somewhat.
There's no out of kayfabe for you because you're not in kayfabe. You're just a dick. Okay. So with that, I take that to mean MJF and Darby was your match of the night, maybe, Todd?
That was, hands down my match of the night.
It was
just for the way
fingernail.
The psychology, because for me, it's all about psychology of matches. And just that psychology of match, telling us what he's going to do at the start of the match and then pulling it off at the end, that to me is, like I said before, chef's kiss. I loved it.
And for me, anytime MJF goes out there and has a match like that, it just makes me think about all the MJF matches we're yet to have. This dude has, potentially decades of wrestling left in him. And
the one thing that AEW have done really well is that they've not overexposed him. I mean, they've done some dumb stuff with him and Jericho where, like, he shouldn't have got bloody the swirly down the toilet. That should never have happened. But luckily, he's that good a talker that people forget about that shit. Well, I mean, I don't, but you know what I mean? People forget about that stuff.
Anything with Jericho, I can wipe out of my memory. That's easy.
But you know what I mean? They haven't put him in nonsense matches on Dynamite or even on Dark or Elevation, where even guys like Cody and Brian and all these guys have done it, and Rampage matches where even Punk and Brian Danielson have all done that stuff. He hasn't done any of that. They've been very economical with his matches.
Because he's MJF, and you need to pay him if he's going to wrestle.
Yeah, but it's just like, he doesn't do it unless it's important or means something. And that's the one thing that they've done really well at AEW is the way that they've booked MJF. So for all of you who say, I say nothing good about them, stick that right up your ass.
and I'm just like staring at the card that we had tonight. MJF has not fought Paige. He has not fought Omega. He has not fought Punk. He has not fought Kingston. He has not fought Malachi Black. He has not fought Pac. He has not fought Andrade. He has not fought Brian Danielson. That's just on this card.
Yeah. But a lot of those guys too, they're heels. So that shouldn't happen.
I know.
Yeah.
But
a lot of the baby faces, like there's a lot of good baby face matches. Him and Punk, people are clamoring for that match already just for the promos alone.
Even if you just look at the tweeners, look at him and Kingston. Yeah. That is going to kick ass.
One thing I will say, like, and I've given them a pat on the back, like AEW a pat on the back for what they've done with MJF. What are they doing with Brian Pillman Jr.?
Nothing.
He was a lumberjack. the other night on Rampage.
Yeah.
I don't understand that at all. That's a guy that they should. That's a guy that should.
He's on the back burner.
That's a guy that should have been one of the four pillars. When you're talking about a company to build around a company, that's what MLW started doing. Like, he was going to be one of their guys. That's just really at the moment, and like, there's plenty of time because he's very young. But at the moment, I feel like they're dropping the ball by putting him on this back burner, putting him on just these nonsense things, to the fact where, like, it might be hard one day to say, oh, now this guy is serious. Well, no, because we've watched him for the last 3 years be a lumberjack. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's for every MJF, there's a Brian Pillman Jr. It's like, for every Ty Conte, there's a Cesar Bononi. Where, like, you say that Ty Conte was really, like, not used well for WWE, and they missed the boat with her. They knew what boat they had with Caesar. Do you know what I mean? They knew what boat they had with Nick Nemeth. Not Nick Nemeth, the other Nemeth.
Ryan.
Yes, there we go. See, that's how much.
So, with that, who do you think AEW is missing the boat on? Who do you think WWE is missing the boat on? Who do you want to see MJF go up against? There are so many things we want to know, and you can let us know, and we can talk about it right here on Making Chicken Salad. The way to do that is to head over to WrestleRadio AU on Twitter, WrestleRadio AU on Instagram, WrestleRadio Australia on Facebook. Leave us a comment. Tell us what you want us to talk about. We love to hear from you guys, and the more you get in there and let us know what you want to see, the more we can chat about it. Coming up next, we are going to talk about what's happening over in New Japan.
Before we do that, though.
And we're going to get into Yes.
Sorry. Final thoughts on the card, because we've talked about it for the last, like, hour or so. Final thoughts on the card. What did you think? Like, say, out of a 10, what would have you given it?
8. This is a solid 8 out of 10. And the reason for that is there were some stinkers. But there were a lot of 9 out of 10s on this card.
Yeah, I think I said to you, like, 7.5 when we talked online about it. I agree with that. I think the biggest attraction it had for it is it had to follow that last pay-per-view they did. That last pay-per-view they did was really, really good. And it's just...
And they managed it.
Yeah, they did. It was just, like I said, I love that Paige is the champ, and I just would have liked to done that final bit a little bit differently. That's all. But 7.5 out of 10, I thought it was a really, really good show. Throw to the ad break, my son. Sorry about that.
There we go. So now we're going to come back. We're going to talk about what's happening over in New Japan. We're going to talk about some listener comments, and we're going to hit That's Debatable. So stick with it. We'll be right back.
December 3rd, Max Watts. PWA returns home. Now We Conquer Live, December 3rd, live on Fight.
This is the Bro Day Pod.
Apparently, he had 2 stipulations. 1, it was an all or nothing in terms of accepting it. Either all of them accept it or none of them accept it.
Oh, dude.
So if there's anyone, like, so he told them all, look, you either all have to accept it or you all don't accept it. So if there's someone like, no, I don't want it. You then, if you're one of the 14 that's like, no, it's okay, you don't have to, you're my friend, don't buy this for me, don't give me $1 million. But then you look at the other 30 and you're like, well, I can't do it to them, so okay, I'll accept. It ran along those lines, right?
Imagine that
big
one
power play.
Imagine if there's one dude that's like,
nah,
guys. Guys, we can't do it to George.
I know,
we
right?
love George. George, take these.
Right.
I would be like, I will punch you. I will slaughter you now.
I don't care. I will kill you. Right. You don't want the million? Fine. I'll have dead two. Set.
He's about to have, he's about to have 13 friends. Like, I swear to God.
Follow Bro Day No Plan B podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Making Chicken Salad. We spent that whole first half talking about Full Gear. There hasn't been a whole lot of news in the world of WWE, so we're going to go right over to the other big one, and that's New Japan, where there was a big event with a couple of big pieces of wrestling news, especially for us Wrestle Radio Australia fans. First off, Okada defeated Buddy Matthews in Matthews' first match for New Japan Strong. We have not been able to watch that match yet, so don't have a review on it, but news, which is about a run-in that happened. Attacking Finn Juice was Jonah, a.k.a. Jonah Rock, a.k.a. Bronson Reed, declaring that he's not going to be some fun flippy boy anymore. He is here for violence. Todd, give us your take.
Yeah, I think it's where we talked about we wanted him to end up. So it is the perfect spot for someone of Jonah's ilk. And by the sound of a tweet that he put out, that he has a working arrangement with New Japan, but he's doing US bookings as well. So I imagine you'll see him around the traps, maybe at a GCW, maybe at an MLW. I don't know. I don't know what the arrangement precludes. So the fact is that he can do...
I'm excited to see him be a monster.
Yeah, he can do indies. So that's... Hopefully we'll see him around more too. So always right. Good. Same with Buddy. It looks like Buddy might be the same. Who knows?
Yeah. Fingers crossed we just get to see more of those, as much of those guys as possible, because fantastic workers. All right. Let's talk about That's Debatable. We did it last week. We're coming to you with back-to-back shows, so we're not going to do That's Debatable this quickly, but we do have something very special for you, and that is my punishment from losing the previous debate. On the last show, you would have heard that Todd has forced me to watch Heroes of Wrestling, a 1999 pay-per-view. If you look on the Facebook page for Wrestle Radio Australia right now, I should have posted this because I had such a bad time. I couldn't just review it. I had to put together a proper magazine style spread reviewing this event. So sit back. Let me read you a little story. You can read along with me at Wrestle Radio Australia on Facebook. This is called Heroes of Wrestling 99, a complete waste of time. So the first section I've got here is called It's Bad, with the headline The Matches Are Awful. Despite the huge number of well-known and successful wrestlers on this card, for some reason there is an absolute inability to put on a single match that is watchable. Two Gold Scorpios on this show. The Iron Sheik tags with Nikolai Volkov. Dutch Mantel is on commentary. There should be some good things on this show. There isn't. The show opens with Samoan SWAT team, Samu and Sika, versus Marty Jannetty and Tommy Rogers. Bad. Greg the Hammer Valentine and George the Animal Steel fight over Sensational Sherry, and it's gross. Bad. Bushwhackers fight Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov, and Sheik is clearly too old to stand, let alone wrestle, and it ends with Volkov turning on him. Bad. You know Abdullah the Butcher? You know One Man Gang? They had a match. It was fucking awful. They both bleed for no good reason. And how did it end? If you guessed by double count out, then either you've already seen this event or you're a psychopath. But either way, you're correct. Somehow, these were just the most uneventful matches on the show. Despite what I thought possible, this show gets worse. So, so much worse. So with that, we'll move on to the next section, which I've titled Casino Magic, with the headline, This Is Not Wrestling. If you thought that the in-ring product was the problem with this show, I have bad news. There's some okay matches on this thing. Two Cold Scorpio versus Julio De Niro is pretty good, but extremely short and ruined by commentator Randy Rosenbloom calling drop kicks leg kicks. Tully Blanchard and Stan Lane have a segment early in the show where Lane jumps Blanchard and throws him in the boot of a car, and the match has a cool finish where Lane hits a suplex, but only Tully gets his shoulders up, leading to an unexpected win. The whole match, though, commentary talks about how attractive Lane is, and the camera keeps cutting to women watching in the crowd. This should be easy. And then the last section is entitled The Snake Penis. It's headlined, These Men Shouldn't Be Here. A double main event could save this show. It could be the thing that makes this all worth it. Oh, I'm so naive. It's hard to watch any Jimmy Snuka match where Snuka is supposed to be the good guy. Bob Orton is not an interesting heel, and the conceit that he cheated at cards doesn't constitute a story. But the next match is much worse. Jake the Snake Roberts is not sober. It's depressing. It's not funny. That's why partway through this match with Jim Neidhart, Yokozuna, who's too big to work here, is sent to be his tag partner, and King Kong Bundy joins Neidhart. Jake gets fondled by a woman in the crowd. You've seen it in the Botchamania intro. Jake uses the snake like a penis and wanks it. And the match is nothing. Don't watch this.
Actually, you can, because there's a YouTube link. There's a YouTube for it, so...
But that's the worst bit. It's free on YouTube. It's 2.5 hours of my life I'm not getting back.
But see, look at the joy you brought me. You know what the ironic thing is? that match, like Jim Neidhart and Jake Roberts, was a main event at Wrestle Riot 2 or 92, I think it was called, at the Thevenin Theatre in Adelaide, which if you talk to any Adelaide wrestler that's around my age, maybe a bit younger, everybody went to that show. Everybody who is anybody in apparently South Australian wrestling was at that show, because if you mentioned it, they go, I was there. So, and they were the main event on it. Jake the Snake, yeah, but and Anvil.
Look at what 7 years of hard living does to some wrestlers.
Yes, yes, indeed. So that was, yeah. When okay, I heard that, when it reminded me, I went, oh shit, I've seen that match live. But it was a lot better.
Yeah, that was, you know how some things so bad that they loop around and become good again. Mm-hmm. This does the 180, but then it goes all the way 360 and then goes back to being bad. It's atrocious.
You're welcome.
It's really bad.
Tell me I don't know how to give you a punishment.
So with that in mind, hey, Todd, who won this debatable last week?
Yeah, you won last week, mate. I will give you that. Okay. It wasn't even close either. Like, you won. Like, it wasn't even like a barb one. You just won.
I've decided that I'm going to try to be a little bit nice, because the thing you gave me was like 2.5 hours. The thing I'm giving you is it's like 70 minutes. It's like less than that. It's like brisk, right?
yeah.
And it is on YouTube. I've actually made a little playlist for you. So I put together like a collection, and it's got a good like time span. So you're going to watch 5 episodes of A Shot of Brandy, which is Brandy Rhodes' YouTube cooking / drink making show.
That's not fair. So, that's not a wrestling show.
I've done a little. It is. I've put together a little. You've got episode 6, which is where she makes a Prosecco cake with Cody Rhodes. After that, you'll be watching episode 33, which has special guest Tony Khan. After that, you've got episode 39, which features Rebel. After that is episode Rebel's 40, right, which features Le Champion Chris Jericho. And then we bring it back with the most recent episode, round 2 of watching Cody Rhodes. So I'll send you the link to that, mate. I'm sure you absolutely love it. Can't just wait for to that, hear your feedback.
The next one will not be Juggalos. You will be watching a Christmas movie starring The Miz. Because that is mean. I would this never have done that to get, you. Mine was always going to be just wrestling.
This is wrestling. Brandy...
No, it's not.
Got Cody Rhodes in it.
Again, not wrestling. I've got Brandy Rhodes in it.
So, Jesus. What you did know I do what?
To you?
I'm.
That's mean.
You made me watch Rhodes to the Top. You made me watch Rhodes to the Top.
You did that yourself with your bad debating.
And you did this to yourself then, Todd. So if you have any suggestions for awful punishments for us to make each other do. For if we lose, that's debatable. Hit up the Wrestle Radio Australia socials. That's Wrestle Radio AU on Instagram and on Twitter, and Wrestle Radio Australia on Facebook. Speaking of that, so we do have some listener comments and questions. We put the call out for thoughts on Full Gear, and we had a couple of people respond. Robert Piccini on Facebook said that bump Don Callis did on the show was the best bump I've seen any manager do in any promotion. It was a good bump.
I feel like that was a dig at me, though. Because that man knows.
I know that that was a dig at you.
Yeah, because that...
That man knows how you try to take stunners.
Yeah, and if he's going to do it, at least spell it properly. Because if you'd have read it properly, he said that dump Don Callis did.
He did say the best dump. Yeah,
because we all know he's not very good at
promo. By the way, I remembered my other JR complaint. He called the cutter a stunner.
Yeah, I remember
JR called the cutter a stunner, and I'm still mad about it. Anyway, we also got a comment on Instagram. Suplex GM commented, thought that the announced team had a great night. Every match was solid. Big props to the street
fight. That's why I started laughing.
Three guys that have one pro wrestling match between them. Only issue was the number of moves performed on the ring apron. I love ring apron stuff. It's the hardest part of the ring. Everyone knows that. And I felt like that was important throughout a lot of the show. It was like, it almost felt purposeful to me. Like, you know, they'd gathered before the show and said, remember, if you want to include it in your storytelling, moves on the apron hurt a lot. Like, it felt like it kept the show cohesive and like one big show. But I also understand that, you know, sometimes you don't want the same thing to happen every match.
Yeah. So anyway.
So with that.
Thank you for writing in though.
It's time for chicken salad and chicken shit.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you guys very much. And please continue to do so. So Todd,
because that was chicken shit. I also like going back to that. That was also my fault because I didn't put up the thing until like this afternoon at like 5:30. So that's why. But thank you to those guys for Friday. My chicken shit first, yes?
Yeah, for getting in within an hour.
Yes.
Yeah, take the chicken shit.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about it a bit earlier. It was the match on Rampage where, like, originally, because I wasn't really, I'll be honest with you, when I was watching Rampage, I wasn't really paying that much attention to it. It was there was a spot at the end of the match. It was a lumberjack match where Pepper Parks Blade slides into the ring and hits hits Orange Cassidy in the back of the head with his brass knucks. Then Matt Hardy decides to do an elbow drop next to him to make it look like he hits him, and then he pinned him. Now, because I wasn't really paying a hell of a lot of attention, I looked at it and go, wow, he's really missed that elbow drop. That's fucking terrible. And so I put it up on my Facebook thing. And all of a sudden, I had all these people defending him because I'm so stupid that he dropped the elbow to make the sound like it was a bump. So it looked like he hit him. Here's my thing with that. Why don't you just fucking hit him? You're a heel. This guy's a guy that you've had a feud with. Why wouldn't you just put an elbow drop on the back of the guy's head a little bit more and then pin him? It makes no sense whatsoever. Look, sure, if you're going to fool the ref, it was a lumberjack match. They were breaking the rules left, right, and center as it was. This is the problem. Like, it's, and then somebody said, oh, Eddie Guerrero used to, no, Eddie Guerrero did not do that all the time. Eddie Guerrero did stuff that made sense. He did stuff to fool people. Nobody was fooled with it. It just looked like he did a fucking elbow drop on the mat for no apparent reason and then pinned the guy. Why wouldn't you just hit the guy? Like, if you were down and we were having a feud, I wouldn't put an elbow next to you. I'd want to hit you.
Yep. Any chance you could get.
Any chance. Like, and that's basically what he's been doing for months with Orange Cassidy. Any chance he's had, he's hit him. Why would he pick the one time when the guy was prone and open and available to be hit to not fucking hit him? That's my chicken shit.
All right. Are you ready for me to get a monster amount of heat for my chicken shit?
Oh, always, because you've got to try and bait me, son.
right. No, I'm not getting excited, but people are going to disagree with me here. Rightfully so. But I know I just said I liked that the Full Gear show felt cohesive because people were using the apron a lot. There was another thing that felt cohesive about this show, which I felt was cheap. And that was yesterday when Full Gear was on, 16 years to the day, the passing of Eddie Guerrero in Minneapolis. So I understand that a lot of these guys have a connection to Eddie Guerrero. Eddie is one of the greatest of all time. There's not much argument there. The dude was absolutely fantastic. He could cut a promo. He could work. He could make you love him. He could make you hate him. He was amazing. And it's tragic how short his life was cut. It is the anniversary of his death, and a pay-per-view is happening in the city where he passed away. Not everyone needs to tribute Eddie Guerrero in their match. There are a couple that I get. Right? Chris Jericho wants to do it. That's fine. The guy worked with him in Japan for years. I get it. Nyla Rose did it. She's managed by his widow. I'll pay that. Lucha Brothers and FTR don't need to be paying tribute to Eddie Guerrero.
Lucha Brothers a little bit because of the whole...
Lucha Brothers a little bit. But you don't have to... Just because you are somewhere does not mean you need to pay tribute to someone. Just because it's a date doesn't mean you need to pay tribute. It felt like every time they were mooching off the memory of a dead man to get a pop.
Yeah.
Right? If you have a strong connection to a person who passed away and you want to pay tribute to them, that's fantastic. Right? It shouldn't be happening on half the matches on a card by people who never worked with the man. Like, for real. You know, I know that there was some tweets with Punk and Vicky saying that Eddie loved Punk, and I know that Punk worked with Eddie. I don't need it. I really don't. It feels cheap. It feels like you don't know how to wrestle well, so you're going to go for that thing that you know the crowd's going to get excited for. And everyone was better than that.
The one thing I will say about Punk is that the Punk thing with Eddie Guerrero in IWA is what Eddie credits as being the point where he decided that he needed to get himself back on track. And working with Punk because it was they really got along. So that I thought Jericho maybe overdid it slightly. I know not to.
Oh, after the match, doing the big point to the sky.
He
and
did it so very much that I was just like, yeah, we get it. It's like, but yeah, I understand what you're saying, but still, there are so many people that loved Eddie and that continue to love Eddie. You look at Sasha Banks, does it a lot with the whole her gear. Sometimes she does the Eddie thing. Even the Inspiration Girls do it as well. Billy used to do it a lot. Peyton used to do it a lot with her gear as well because she was a big Eddie Guerrero fan. It's it's one of those things. I understand where you're coming from completely because I think maybe they could have, not everyone has to do the Three Amigos. But it's sort of like...
And that's the thing, right? I said that going in, people are going to disagree with me. And I get it. I love Eddie. You know, me getting into wrestling was me renting wrestling DVDs from Video Easy and popping them in, not knowing what was going to happen, not knowing what these matches were for. And I remember stupid shit, like the custody of Dominic ladder match, right? And somehow Eddie made that work. So I've got all these incredible memories of Eddie getting me into wrestling. But it didn't sit right with me, I guess is where I'm at. It didn't feel like it was needed. It took me out of the show. I was not a fan.
Okay.
So that's what I'm putting in my chicken shit.
Bring the people back with your chicken salad, mate.
All right.
I'll let you do that because you need to have a comeback now. You've taken the heat now. Come back, brother.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about a moment, and we mentioned it, but this is what wrestling storytelling is. After Adam Page won the belt, Dark Order appeared, made their way into the ring to celebrate with him. Reynolds, held out a beer to him, offered him a beer in celebration. And Page grabbed the beer out of his hand, threw it away, got them all into a big group hug. That is wrestling storytelling. Adam Page is accepting the love of the people that are offering him love, and everyone is supporting him. Dark Order is there for him. The graphics team is there for him. The crowd is there for him. And they got to raise him in a moment of jubilation after winning the title. He got to hold it high. That was probably the best moment in wrestling this year. I don't think there's going to be a moment that tops it. It is the culmination of so much that has happened over such a long period of time to get to this story beat. And they nailed it with the Dark Order coming out. I think that the Dark Order was absolutely lost after the passing of Brody, and having them latch on to Paige in this way, attaching them to, because they're all silly, goofy, fun guys the same way Paige is, attaching them to Paige, making them these oddball outcasts who are going to support their friend and not interfere when he asks them not to, but they're going to be there when he wins the big one. Loved it. It was the best. That's what wrestling's all about.
There you go. My chicken salad from this thing is, of course, is MJF. Just, if I wasn't a fan of him before, I'm 1,000% behind MJF. I love his promo work, his pacing for a guy that's been in the business for as long as he has been, to know to not overdo stuff, to know to let the babyface like fire up at you instead of just eating them up like so many young guys would do because they've got this spot where this is what I'm going to do, to never breaking character, never letting the fans in for a second that like, this is all just that never happens with MJF. Never get that. I love this guy's work. And eventually when the time is right, he will be one of the biggest baby faces in the world. When he eventually like accepts the fact that all these people are starting to like him, even though he talks bad of them, if he starts turning around and talking bad about heels like that, they are going to love the absolute shit out of the guy. And that's my chicken shit for this episode.
Your chicken salad. MJF debuted in 2015. MJF is 25 years old. He was born in 1996.
If you think about it, if MLW happened to have the connections that Tony Khan had and they could have got themselves onto broadcast TV, it might have been a whole different ballgame, because he had Brian Pillman, MJF, like Tom Lawler, the filthy Tom Lawler, the group that he had, Von Erichs, there's a whole group of guys in that MLW roster. Even back then when they had the Hart Foundation with, like, it was Teddy Hart before he went completely troppo, Davey Boy and Brian Pillman Jr. Those three were a great team, and they were putting on some bangers. They had the Lucha Bros.
Did you ever see MJF and Richard Holiday as a tag team?
Yes. Yeah. What were they called? The Dynasty.
So good.
Yeah. 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 The whole group was good.
Yeah.
That's when you think about that. When you think about where a lot of these guys from AEW came through. They came through, like Darby came through from Evolve. Like that whole series with him and Ethan Page. If you get a chance to go back and watch that, do watch that, because that series was amazing. That's when they started doing their thing in AEW. I was like, I don't care if you just completely repeat that series. Just
do it again.
You did. Just do it again, because it was brilliant. It was such a good story that you could do it again, because bugger all people saw this Evolve story.
And it was happening at, you know, not far from the time that they were doing, like, they did the Keith Lee versus what's bro's name, Matt Riddle, did that insane series for the title. Like,
I remember there was so one good... there was one match, and this is probably very like obscure, but it was what's his name? Rich. So the black dude with the
Rich Swan.
Rich Swan. There we go. It's Rich Swan against Drew Gulak. And it's when Rich Swan used to do that standing, like you jump twice, then do a 450 standing. He did that, and when he did that, Drew Gulak brought both his feet up straight. And that was the finish of the match. And it was brutal and it was beautiful. And I was just that, like, that sold me on Drew Gulak from the start. I love Drew Gulak. I wish he had more of a chance than he's gotten in WWE. That whole Catchpoint group is something that could have really done well. That Catchpoint group is something that could really do well in somewhere like an AEW. So I don't know where we went with that.
We're just if you look at now. Like it, we're just talking about stuff that we like, right?
Mm.
It's weird to me that if you look at Catchpoint and who their manager was, that he's doing the Diamond Mine thing now, because he's so good. He's so good.
Just let managers be managers. That's the thing with that they haven't had. They've always just grabbed a wrestler and go, we'll just make him a manager for a while. And then he can wrestle.
I just want Stokely Hathaway back doing what he does.
Mm.
Anyway, we love wrestling here, if you couldn't tell. We love wrestling around the world, but we also love wrestling in Australia. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to Wrestle Radio Australia. It's free. It's on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can get Wrestle Radio Australia. Go and hit subscribe. If you're stopping on Apple Podcasts, please rate us. Give us a review. 5 stars, please. It really helps us get to new listeners. Get on to, and that's the thing we need to talk about, the big competition we've got going, the WrestleMania Steel Cage Challenge game, new in the box that Todd is giving away. Jump onto the social medias. That's Wrestle Radio AU on Twitter. It's Wrestle Radio AU on Instagram, Wrestle Radio Australia on Facebook. Share what we're doing, and you can go in for the chance to win this awesome prize.
Yeah, share the post.
How much of that got cut out by my unstable internet?
No, it's fine. Like all the words came out, just the face wasn't. Share
the face never does.
No, well, there you go. Share the post that's advertising the episode, like with the link to the episode, and tag us in it for a chance to win that. It's gonna be drawn in another 2 weeks. So there we go.
While you're on those socials, let us know what you're liking about the show, what you're liking in international wrestling, what you'd like us to talk about. Also, make sure you do check out those main Wrestle Radio Australia episodes, because there was just an amazing episode about Reawakening with the past of EPW, the present of EPW, and the future of EPW all in one episode. Super cool to see stuff like that pushing what's going on in Australian wrestling. So huge credit to Todd for doing that, because mate, you are good at what you do.
Oh, thank you, sir. I mean, I sounded like shit, but those three sounded really good. So please don't, like, if you saw that or you heard the episode, I did one thing that is a cardinal mistake for any podcast or anything. I did not check my equipment before the setup of the equipment before I recorded. I should have. See, what happens is I don't like wearing headphones because it's just hot. And I don't like that. So I bought some Bluetooth, like you can see them, Bluetooth ones. They sit nicely in my ears. The problem is they also have a microphone. And then if I turn it on, apparently it overrides the microphone that I, like this wonderful thing.
You don't come through the good stuff. You need the good stuff.
Yeah, the hell of a lot of money on. So I didn't realize this until after the show, when I started editing it, and I'm like, why do I sound like I'm talking through a sock? But yes, much consternation about that. But the episode was really fun. Like Storm's great. Julian's great. Edith is great. All good content about the history of EPW and Reawakening. And then the fact is, it's their biggest show of the year. I think it's another 2 weeks away or something. They're sold out. They've sold out a month going into the show, which is an amazing thing for a local promotion to do. So yeah, that's why I wanted to get the guys together and have a chat, and we did it and had fun. So check it out if you can.
Awesome. Make sure when you're going on to the socials to give us a follow. You can also follow Todd at Beast Eastman, and you can follow me at Lachlan Albert. That's right, I fixed the handle. So with that, Todd, is there anything else you want to say before we go?
No, just drop the elbow on the guy.
Just drop the elbow on him.
Just drop the elbow on
He's
him.
There.
He's right there.
That grumpy old man is Todd Eastman. I've been Lachlan Albert. Have a good one.
Shot of brandy. What a mother.